allow the department to respond to his question. If you still remember his question, can you please quickly then we move on to Mr. Nkosi.
Chairperson, thank you. There's still a few questions still outstanding. I'm going to ask Commissioner Malamu to respond to the two questions from Reverend Mswe, and then Commissioner Skipper will deal with the two questions relevant to the budget, and then Commissioner Sabunda will deal with the issue of the loss of firearms and the bulletproof vest, and lastly, Director Semelo will deal with the issue of the sexual offences, the increase in that one, as well as the study in terms of the health property. Thank you.
Commissioner Stander, can you please respond to Honourable Ndlovu, Honourable Mishwe's question? Then we'll take Ms. Ndlovu's questions, then you respond to all those questions.
Chairperson, thanks. When it comes to crime scene management, and I think that is what the Honourable Member was referred to, the normal process crime scene management, when there is a crime, members who's first on the scene of crime must secure the crime scene. So if we refer to the issue of the shooting of that shooting incident, those members were supposed to secure the crime scene immediately and look after the injured people during the whole process. So we are not currently not in the process of investigating, the ICD is investigating, but that is the normal process, firstly. Secondly, the issue about the availability of drivers, that is the responsibility of the station commission to ensure there's enough drivers on that specific shift. He or she must make sure there is members available. And if there's no members of SIG, it becomes his responsibility or responsibility to rather call up people to come and do the necessary driving. So they can't come with the excuse that there's no drivers because they are of SIG. Because one of our criteria is that when we enlist people, they must have a driver's license. Thanks, Chair.
One more. There's one about when at a roadblock, a driver does not stop. Do you shoot at the driver or do you shoot at the tire?
Chair, I think the Chair was very clear. You cannot shoot if someone's life or your own life is not in danger. There'd be no basis for shooting. The issue was to call support, to pursue the person and call support to have interventions. That's how people are trained to deal with those situations.
Thank you. Let's take Mr. Ndlovu's question.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Thank you very much for your indulgence. There are about two questions. It seems as if there are firearms that have been recovered. Out of these firearms, there are R5s. How many are those firearms that have been recovered that are linked to the criminal cases? Because firearms, R5, most of them are used by the police. How many? If there is a figure in place. Secondly, Chairperson, when we talk about the attack on police, we talk about attack and the killing. How do you differentiate? Where does the police person is off duty or is on duty? What do you mean attack and killing? What does that? Can you just clarify that? Because I want to understand. If you say a person has been attacked, and not dead. I'm not talking about that. And they're killing. When a person is on duty, you talk about 8 hours or do you talk about 24 hours? We're talking about a police person. Lastly, Chairperson, the variment. Yes. I want to understand that the visible police is the core business of the police. If the environment, therefore, is taken from them to something else, what does that mean? I understand about the others, but if you take from the core business of the police, what does really mean? Does it mean that they are not supposed to achieve their targets? Or what? or maybe it's that their numbers have increased. Where does it come in? And this is under 8% according to the norm. If it's under 8%, that is understandable. But I want to get the idea. Why do you take from the core business of the police? Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Commissioner Stander, for how long is Deputy Commissioner Brace off sick?
He need to go for an ear operation. He's not off sick at this point in time, but he cannot fly at this point in time because he fly some time ago and the eardrum burst. So he must go for an operation. So he will soon go in for the operation. He cannot fly at this point in time. The doctor barred him from flying to Cape Town.
So he won't be here even next week, Tuesday.
Yes.
I was also considering Shosho Loza train. Because it's unfortunate. We would want to have him appearing as well. Because we want to say these things to people who are to account to Parliament David. But we hear what you say. We can respond to questions.
And thank you. I'm going to ask Commissioner Skutter to deal with those three questions. There are four questions now that include the last question from Honorable Mglobo as well in terms of the veteran, the AVL, and the questions relevant to your inquiry.
Thank you, Chairperson. As we've said there, we've expended, as members of the committee indicated, we've got big growth. We spend according to the priorities of the medium-term budget policy statement, of the strategic priorities, and so forth. Distribution, yes, should be improved, and also utilization. Madam Chairperson, you requested a question about AVL, and it's also one of the aspects that we've indicated that was a spending priority there in your in the overview of capacity building in our slides. We, at the time when we appeared before SCOPA, we said to SCOPA that we will implement 5,000 units on top of what we have already implemented in this year, and then another 5,000 in the next financial year. Then SCOPA came back last week, or the 8th of October, yes, with a decision and said, notwithstanding the response from the Department of Police, the committee recommends that AVL on all operational vehicles be implemented during the 2010-09 financial year. So, Mr. Joyce, I'm going to look for money again here. But the fact is we have to implement 10,000 vehicles, basically, on top of what we've implemented, because SCOPA is actually pushing us now into a direction and because of the control mechanism. I think if we can make this AVL thing work on the vehicles, Madam Chairperson, that's a good control mechanism. I mean, so many firms and businesses out there are also using the same kind of methodology. It is the latest methodology, coupled with better supervision, better management at station level, and so forth. SCOPA also said proper monitoring of the vehicles at police stations is implemented to ensure responsible, authorized usage thereof, also after hours, and disciplinary measures be instituted against personnel found to be in contravention of applicable policies and regulations. So we sit with this whole big resource of nearly 42,000 vehicles that we must get more out of and manage better in a certain manner. And I think AVL, if we can make it work, is in this. I hope it will address your question that you've put to SAPS, Madam Chairperson, in this regard. We will also leave this with the Chairperson to dovetail maybe with a decision also of SCOPA for your minute-taking purposes.
Where have you implemented
it? Where have we? Madam Chairperson, we wrote at that point in time. But the figures have now changed because this was a letter dated 22 July. We've implemented so many units at those provinces. But this is an outdated figure. I suppose it has since changed. At that point, it was the 24,000 units. And I can read it or I can just provide it basically to you. But that is a pre-revised figure. The latest figures will look a bit different, more in terms of the provinces.
Ladies, since the last report, and then there's another 1,400 that has been procured last week, which is in the process of installation now during this week and the next week.
Okay. Madam Chairperson, and then we have to go to the Vila Mint one once again, and maybe just to indicate again our slide, as I've indicated, sir and Mr. George, we did achieve our target. We were 89,000 people on visible policy, and this year 96,000. So they appointed more than 6,000 people. Everybody that they wanted to appoint under visible policing, they did in fact. The virements, a little bit of a surplus resulted under operational expenditures, which did not precisely realize, and it was shifted basically to detectives, also to buy vehicles at the detective program. But it is such a fraction, it's such a small fraction, it is 0.58%. We still spend 17 billion on visible policing, which is 41% of the total funds in terms of the weight that we spent. So it is still a very important aspect, and the police did achieve and did do what they wanted to do under that program. It is, in previous years, Mr. George, the little bit of a surplus emanated from lesser expenditure under personnel. This year it was not the case. All personnel expenditure resulted in this program. So everybody was appointed that should have been appointed, which is a big indicator under that program.
Okay. Same, I'm assuming the same applies to crime intelligence.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. All those priorities, the Vispol people, the detectives, which you also raised previously, as well as the crime intelligence resources, especially human resources, very, very important. And those targets are being driven by any or everybody around this table, sir, in terms of appointments.
How much will it cost to install the AVLs on all your cars? Have you costed that?
We have. I don't have it with me. Maybe.
How long will it take? How much do you have for this budget, and how have you budgeted for the coming year?
We will not, Madam Chairperson, install for the whole fleet of 42,000 vehicles, because there are vehicles that they're not cost efficient. For instance, employee assistance services. To install a unit, pay a monthly tracking fee, and eventually. And there's no interface for that vehicle specifically with the community per se. We first say, let's go for the operational vehicles. You will see SCOPA also monitored as such. I think the device, Commissioner Mayor, is approximately, what's it per month? It's an installation fee of how much, and then a monthly fee of how many?
On Vodacom per device per vehicle. And then the maintenance portion, commission, is R37.98 per month per vehicle.
And upfront installation
commissioner, it's Madam Chairperson, is R457 per vehicle.
Have you cost it? Because you're explaining to me that Adam, surely you should know as to which one you're going to install.
The 5,001 we funded, but now SCOPA is saying get another 5,000 in this year. We will have to. We've costed it. We do have it. I can work it out quickly now because we do have it. But we will have to look for the funds for another 5,000.
You've not costed, because what your extra. I would imagine a situation where you say out of 42 vehicles that we have, we're not going to install AVL on 10,000, I'm just making an example, and therefore we need so much for the 35,000, you know, something like that, so that we know. And for you, it will take you so much time to have AVL installed on all those cars that you think they should have AVL. Because I agree.
It's going to
assist us a great deal if it is properly done and properly managed.
Yes, we have costed it, but I don't want to take a guesstimate on it. I'd rather provide you with a more accurate figure than try to remember off the cuff, and later on I say, yes, I was out with a couple of million. So we'd rather provide it to you then in writing and say, this will be the proper costing model together with the implementation. I think that's a better way to go than for me to try and remember. Yes, it has been costed. Obviously, there's budget for it.
That's the issue, is the implementation and the monitoring of it. And in the COPA report, there's also a reference, I think, in the Auditor General's review of these things, that there's not proper monitoring of it. And not proper management of it either. And now are we addressing that? Because it's no use that we continue putting in the other 10,000 if we are already not managing the ones that we've got in. And then the second question, is it tampering safe? Because there's also rumors going around already that such members are putting these things, switching them off.
Chairperson, thank you. I think in terms of the monitoring, we have put mechanisms in place. We have allocated posts to all the provincial commissioners at supply chain management to specifically monitor the AVL implementation, because this was also raised by SCOPA, and they have requested also the very same thing as to what monitoring mechanisms will you put in place. So on a continuous basis, supply chain management will have to monitor the implementation of AVL in the province. In terms of the tempering, Malin, Commissioner Meyer, I'm going to ask you just to respond on that.
Thank you, Madam Chair. In the past, they could have tampered with it, but we made some alterations, so there's no way that they can tamper with the DigiCore AVL. But the Tetra AVL can be tampered with. That's why we're not using it. Now, we're using the DigiCore AVL because you cannot tamper with that. It's set in, up in another fashion than the Tetra one. Thank you, Madam
Chair. Thank you. I think there's still two questions outstanding, two from Mr. Global that I'm going to ask Commissioner Lamour. But before he's responding to that, there's still two questions outstanding, the increase of sexual offences as well as the increase on house robberies. I'm going to ask Director Simela just to respond on those, then we have attended to all the questions.
Thanks, Chairperson. Thanks, Commissioner. The increase in sexual offences, that can be explained by the changes in the Sexual Offences Act. The new Sexual Offences Act was implemented on the 16th of December 2006. And that act includes more things than what was included in the old act. Currently, a man can be raped. He can be raped by a woman or a man. So there are more things that are included in the new act. That is why you have that increase. And again, we are running a study on just to check if this our hypothesis is correct, if that increase is because of the changes in the act. And the increase in robbery at residential premises or non-residential premises. Again, we also have increases with regard to burglary at the residential premises and non-residential premises. There's a belief that this might be caused by the economic situation that we are in, but we're also running a study on those just to check, to confirm our hypothesis, if our hypothesis is correct or if it's not correct. Thanks, Chairperson.
You know, if I go to Elukwaten right now, out of 10 house robberies that are reported there, only a house robbery where murder or rape occurred, that a suspect will be arrested. The rest, they are not, as long as it is just a house robbery without any murder or rape. A suspect is not. In fact, if you go to open a case, you get the impression that they are allowing you to open it so that you can get a case number in case you have an insurance, not because they will fall. And somebody will therefore think that the reasons why you have so many house robberies is because robbers know that will not be arrested for as long as we don't kill, we don't rape. If you go to Elukwatini now, I can tell you, you will not get any case where it's house robbery, your things are taken, but you're not killed, you're not raped. That case just goes. Nobody is arrested. And it promotes this house robbery, I want to believe, in one way or another. You get that impression as you open a case that nobody is taking you seriously here and nobody will be arrested. In fact, if you were to say, I suspect Annelisa to have robbed my house or broken into my house, you are sure that he will be told, she will be told. I'm just... So I'm saying that. And for me, that is actually promoting. Because it happens like, it's like people are coming into our houses and they have every right to knock and come, take and go. As long as they don't murder you. I can give examples of such cases. I've been following them. When it is a murder, then of course somebody will be arrested. If there is rape, somebody will be arrested, which is important, of course. But if it is just robbery, your property is taken and everything, you are sure, guaranteed, nobody will be arrested. It's guaranteed. Nobody will be arrested at all. At all. And that is why I keep on asking this question to say, is it not promoting? Is it not encouraging that this, even a Mafunda criminal, will do it anyway because nobody will arrest or nobody will worry him? People might even know as to who are doing that. But if it is just robbery and robbery alone, they just go in there, they take, they leave, they will never be arrested. So they're walking free and they are known. I'm just saying that to say probably that is another issue that we need to look into. How many of these house robbery cases end up with arrests and in court? How many of them?
Thanks, Chairperson. I've just consulted and asked two questions earlier on. I was informed that these questions were not responded to. I'll repeat my questions. I see that you suspended 16 employees with salary. You suspended 124 without salary. And that is a serious discrepancy. Suspension is suspension, and it's not termination of work or dismissal. I want to know why. Give others salary, others no salary. Second question is based on your vacancy posts that you reported. You mentioned in your report that you've got about 400, more than 400 unfilled posts. My question is when are you going to fill these posts? Thanks.
Chairperson, thank you. Commissioner Patlani will respond to those.
In fact, the other question is being asked by my colleague. The second one is when people lose their stuff, police come and go and arrest the person, and the suspect has sold my stuff next door. By the time I was a member of CPF, they used to call it the SAP betting. I still want to check if it's still in operation in all police stations, but also to check this big bus of drugs, where are they being kept? Because in our area, we know that the smaller ones
other members go to that SAP, they've been reselling it again to the very same people. How safe is the SAP thing? And about our cars that are stolen and recovered, sometimes you find that some parts are not there. How safe is the SAP thing? Thank you.
Thank you, Jefferson. Jefferson, there's still two questions outstanding with regard to the firearms. How many lost and how many recovered, as well as the bulletproofs, how many members do have bulletproof vests. So I'm going to ask Commissioner Sebundla to respond to that, and then Commissioner Lamour will respond to the latest question.
Thank you, Chairperson. Insofar as bulletproof vests are concerned, all operational members have got bulletproof vests. In the presentation by Commissioner Skete, it was alluded that 200,000 bulletproof vests are in the possession of members. June, July last year, we asked all provinces and divisions to certify that each and every operational member has got a bulletproof vest in his personal inventory. That was done. And we are continually buying bulletproof vests even at this time, this financial year, since we have more reservists and more students. Commissioner Mufuma will deal with the firearms. Thank you, Chairperson.
Chairperson, thank you. With regards to firearm losses, I just want to indicate that losses for us would include those that were robbed, stolen, or lost by members. It's not only those that were lost. At this stage, the figure that I have is by the end of September 2009, 2,944 were reported. However, 2,944. However, this figure is not only for the previous financial year because it's not covered in the report, so I didn't come with the exact figure that I can provide to you, Chairperson. And then the other thing was how many of those were recovered. I have a figure of 446, but I want to repeat as well that this 446 is not necessarily those that were recovered. I'm not able to say for sure that these are the ones that were recovered in the year under review. So that breakdown I will provide at a later stage, Chairperson. Now, another thing with regards to the firearms that I want to mention is that Commissioner Skete already referred to the process of the dot pin as well as marking the firearms with the SAPS logo, and that process is continuing, and that makes it easier that when firearms are recovered, we are able to see whether it was a police issued firearm or not, Chairperson.
Sorry, I was a bit confused there about the actual. You said by the end of September, but from when does that figure of 2944 go? Is it from March last year? Okay, sorry. Could you just give me the exact date that you're talking about? Thank you.
Chairperson, as I indicated, this is the total figure, but I do not have the breakdown. If I'm given the opportunity, I will do the breakdown and then I will submit it because I didn't come prepared to say, for instance, maybe this was the last 5 years or last year or so on. So this is not the breakdown, it's the total number of losses that were reported. I will get the, definitely not in January that I will provide.
I will accept that so that you give us correct information.
Okay.
That you are saying it, I think it's better than to give us wrong information, then we have you on that one. But we want that information by Tuesday.
Follow up on that. Is there any explanation why it's not in the annual report this year? Because previous years this was actually an issue of contention with the Auditor General, that he was saying SAPS is not managing
it, the firearms properly? And can we, when we get the figures on Tuesday, can we also get a breakdown of how many of those firearms are fines? And the reason why I'm asking it is more and more we see that the crimes committed, especially in Gauteng, in the shopping centers, etc., are committed with R5s, not AK-47s, as everybody likes to believe, but actually with R5s.
Chair, I just want to make sure I'm absolutely straight. We have been told that civilian firearms, they've actually recovered 106%. So the entire lot stolen have been recovered and some from the previous year, whereas the SAFS firearms, I don't know what the percentage is of 446 into 2,944, but it's tiny. I just need some help here. What it's saying to me is that when the claim is that there are guns everywhere, it's not civilian guns being utilized in robberies because they're all recovered. It's the SAPS guns because we've seen the figures previously, and it adds up to thousands and thousands and thousands over the years that have been lost and very few recovered. So if it's not the civilian guns, it's got to be the SAPS guns being used in these robberies and in crimes that are not, obviously not guns smuggled in over the border. Very, very interesting what we're being told here.
Also be assisted because I just can't understand the figure that I hear. If last year your recovery was 100-something%, and then this year again, it's 110-something%. What does that mean? Where do you get the 100-something% if you had nothing outstanding the previous year? I'm just checking, Rick.
Chairperson, as I stated that in the previous financial year, the one under review now, there's over 12,000 firearms reported lost or stolen, according to our system. No. We're talking about firearms in general. And that can include, because they have to report that firearms also lost and stolen. Now, in the specific financial year, we recover more firearms, and it doesn't mean that those firearms were stolen in that specific financial year. Some of these firearms date back 3, 4, 5 years. And that's why if we compare it with the amount of firearms lost or stolen, with those recovered, that's the reason why we have a percentage of more than 100%.
Madam Chair, I cannot tell you the reason why it's not specifically mentioned that SAPS firearms, but those that were stolen includes SAPS firearms. That's how it's recorded.
No problem with that, because it's been a contentious issue. Are we basically saying to one another what we're going to do in future is if something was an issue before, let's just not report on it next time. And then members will forget about it, and we won't ask questions. I'm sorry to say this, but we actually do remember, and we actually read up from previous reports as well. It's not going to work, and I think we need to get that information. Specifically, Chairperson, because it's been an issue with the Auditor General. It's been an issue year in and year out. It's been an issue. As much as the performance agreement, the performance management are going to lead, if it's not properly addressed, to a qualified Auditor General's report. It's been an issue, it needs to be reported on.
Madam Chair.
Hey, you must ask the Chair whether you
can. She has allowed me. You don't look. In fact, Madam Chair, the police are supposed to give us even statistics of firearms lost from all security department. No, I'm not talking about auditing now. I'm talking about, because once a firearm is stolen, even if it's stolen from correctional service, it becomes a crime. Surely the police must investigate that. Because, you see, we must begin to know how many of the firearms used by criminals are coming from the state.
because that's important. And I don't want to believe that the police are not supposed to be concerned, because there are also firearms that are stolen from the SANDF, and the police are supposed to know that, because it impacts on their work. How many firearms are stolen from the correctional services? I'm talking about the institutions that use firearms. I think this should be, but this is even worse when they don't even know those that are stolen from them, or they are not reporting them. Because in their fight against crime, they must know what is the major source of these illegal firearms, because that's important.
Yeah. Can I also ask, is it possible for police to report firearms and the percentage of recovery in the manner that says, because I just want to know, I'm not sure whether it's possible, in the manner that says 2008, 2009, these were the firearms that were reported. And of these firearms that were reported during this period, this is the percentage that we recovered. And these were reported in the previous years, and this is the percentage. Because for now, this 106%, for me, it's really misleading. It's not talking to the reality. That is why I'm really asking. I'm asking that because you read the previous reports, they will be talking the 100 and something. It makes you think that it means you recovered everything and more. But again, the following year, it's everything and more. You can't say, is it possible to break it down that we really get the picture as to how many were recovered and that were reported that financial? Is it possible to do that? I just want to check. Because if it is possible, for me, that reporting will assist us to break it down.
Chairperson, yes, it will be possible, although it will not be accurate. And the reason why I'm saying not be accurate, because some firearms serial numbers have been removed totally. And even during an etching process, we can't identify that. But we will be able to say, this is the firearms report stolen for this financial year, because we have CAF numbers, and we will automatically be able to. But then we will have to separate it between loss. Because you just report a firearm loss. It's not necessarily an investigation part, because people lost firearms and we recovered a lost firearm. But stolen firearms, we can do it much easier. If you can give us time, because this is not going to be an exercise that we will be able to finish by next week, because we have to go back into the systems and then retrieve that information.
It could have been reported in 1 year. But lost 4 years ago. That also happened. So you said it was a loss in 2006, but reported in 2008. It must just be understood.
Chairperson, I hear what Commissioner Skirta is saying, but the problem, the issue is, the firearm is reported stolen in that financial year. It doesn't matter when it was lost or when it was stolen. And then this is the figure that we report according to our annual report. Yeah.
If I may ask that we add on to that, and I don't know also if this can be done, I would be very interested to know, in the recovered, you've recovered all of them, how many of them had been utilized in robberies? In other words, when you recovered them, was it at the scene of a crime or at a roadblock, whatever? So either it was used in the perpetration of some crime or not. But, I mean, that should be not beyond the realms of possibility, I think, to put in as well. Am I right or wrong?
Chairperson, no, it's not so easy. We must understand that if a firearm is stolen, or let me rephrase, when somebody buy a firearm, that firearm is not ballistically put on our data system. So that means there is no shell or no cartridge put on our data system. So when a firearm is stolen, then we recover that firearm. Although we can pick up, it doesn't mean it is really the firearm that was used in a commission of crime in KwaMashu or in Western Cape. So if there's no shots, we won't be able to trace that.
Thank you. I think there's still questions outstanding, Commissioner Patlani, in terms of the suspension with and without salary.
as well as the vacancy rate. Have you responded to those two questions?
Thanks, Chair. Let me start with the vacancy. I think the number that the honourable member is mentioning, it's the 446. Because at the end of the previous financial year, our target was to get to 13180, and we ended with 182274. The response is we are in the process of filling those posts. They will be filled during this financial year. As at the end of September now, we have moved from that 182754 to 185368, and within that number, what was not filled is being taken into consideration. In respect of the question on suspensions, mentioned the 16 suspended with salary. I think the easier way to explain is that when a member suspension is under consideration following an act of misconduct, he or she is being served with a notice, and that notice will be saying your suspension or alternative placement is being considered. He or she is expected to make a representation. And the commander responsible, or at this stage it's kept on the level of assistant commissioner, is to take the seriousness of the misconduct and other elements into consideration, including the circumstances outlined in a member's representation, to arrive at a decision whether to suspend with or without salary. In some instances, even if the intention was to suspend, that suspension will not be effected. You will opt for placing him or her in an alternative environment. But it's the seriousness of the misconduct and the chances of a dismissal as a sanction that will be taken into consideration, amongst others, to arrive at that decision of whether to suspend with or without the benefits.
The last question is with regard to the SAP 13 store.
Can I make a follow-up on the question, please? I want to check with the staff as to, do we have a grievance procedure, disciplinary procedure, code of conduct? Because the explanation that Brother Kamena, I can suspend you because I hate you, I can suspend without pay, it's not going to work. If there are policies, I think the best way is to use them. Is there a code of conduct, disciplinary procedures? Let the people be, really equal in the eyes of law, because the explanation really says something else.
May I respond? Safe to say we have the grievance procedure and the discipline code. Both of them are the outcome of a consultation or negotiation process with labor. So this, what we are saying, it's not an individual position. It's a position that is accommodated in the policies, which will outline the circumstances under which a suspension without benefits is to be considered, and the circumstances under which a suspension with benefits is to be considered, and even the issue of alternative placement. When it comes to discipline, the grievance procedure does not come into the equation here. because the grievance procedure is applicable when a member is aggrieved on, issues related to him as a person. Now, here we are talking a misconduct, behavior that deviates from the behavior expected of us in terms of the code of conduct.
A follow-up, Chair. See, we should not use emotions when we take a breath from humanity. This becomes personal if there are no criteria. I don't hear the honorable member here saying to us, I suspend you with salary because of this criteria. I don't hear him saying without salary is because he talks about seriousness. And seriousness is personal and it's emotional. So I do not really agree that we should continue this practice. Thanks.
If I may, I'm going to attempt because I do not have the policy with me here so that I could go through it. But the seriousness is defined in the policy. For example, this person committed a Schedule 1 offense where, for example, the chances of securing a conviction is great. This person has been arrested after, an investigation following a criminal matter. So there are a number of issues that are not premised in an individual, which issues are located in the policy to define that seriousness, which commanders are to take into consideration to say, did he do this, did you do that, and then they arrive at the decision. And this authority to suspend is not located all over. It is a matter that is being presented before the provincial or the divisional commissioner with a set of circumstances, and that decision will be taken. But it's also safe to mention that we are currently in the process, as I said earlier, to review the discipline code. Amongst others, the issue of suspension will be considered.
Chairperson, I think we must be careful around this issue because, I mean, we expect of police officers to be above reproach. And, with the fact that certain disciplinary hearings can drag on for a year, 2 years, 3 years, do we really want to continue to pay police officers? And sometimes it really is because of the fact that they come with a sick note and another sick note and another sick note, and it continues that way. So I think in order to address the concerns, I think what we need to do is to ask SAPS, once they've done that disciplinary review of the procedures, is to come and present it to us that we can see whether we are satisfied in terms of that it, on the one hand, properly address labor issues so that we don't discriminate against SAPS members, but on the other hand, also make sure that in that procedures it also does not provide the opportunity for people actually to abuse those systems and not to finalize their cases, so that they can keep on getting pay while they are actually suspended. So I would appeal that we maybe consider just taking that approach forward in terms of that. And if that's okay with you, then I would also like to ask a follow-up question on something else.
No, I think it's okay with me. In fact, as I was reading these figures, what came into my mind, the 400 and something cases brought forward from the previous year, and the number finalized, was to say, of that 400 and something, how many have been finalized now? Or we still have cases that were brought forward from that year to here, and now they will appear next year as brought forward, and you find that there is a case that has been dragging since 2006, and it is always a brought forward, and you don't know as to from where is it coming from. I just had that in my mind. And of those, how many? Do you have police who are on suspension because of those tracking cases with full salary? But one other thing is when you visit this police station, you find people drunk. Drunk. I mean, really drunk. I mean, drunk. I can give you police stations where I found drunk policemen on duty. And of these many disciplinary cases, how many involve managers? Or because they are managers, they can't be touched. You have all these things in your mind. There is a follow-up question.
Chairperson, the one issue that I think that we just need to touch on is the issue of the redefinition of under 18. Because on the one hand, SAPS is reporting a decrease in crimes committed against children. But on the other hand, you've redefined the age. And I find it quite interesting that you know, maybe I should say quite opportunistic, that on the one hand, SAPS is willing to say our increase in sexual crimes is because of the redefinition of what constitutes sexual crimes. But on the other hand, when we've got a decrease in terms of crimes against children, yes, we mention it, but we don't mention it too loud, that we've actually redefined what a child is. So my question is basically two questions relating to the same issue. On the one hand, can you explain to us whether this redefinition is also the definition as used in the Child Act and the Children's Act? Secondly, if you take that section of redefining a child out of your figures, do you still have a decrease in terms of sexual crimes committed against children? It can't be, I think, because it's got less, it's minus 2 point something.
And maybe to add on this one question, according to your figures, under 18 years, it's a particular 20,141, both girls and boys. And 18 years and older, it's 30,124. And if you add that, you get 50,265. Yet your actual raw figure, according to the report, is 71,500. Are you therefore saying the 21,235 cases reported by older men?
Thank you, Chairperson. The redefinition, it's not actually a redefinition. What happened there, it was an oversight on our part. Previously, our programmers thought that a child is any person from 0 to 18 years plus 364 days. But we discovered that a child is actually someone from 0 to 17 years plus 364 days. So it's not a redefinition. And what we did is, we compared.
No, sir, it is. It definitely is. You defined it wrongly. Now you are redefining it correctly because the latter definition is correct, but you are it's a definition. So you used two different definitions and they affected your figures for sure. So it's a definition for sure.
I agree, Chairperson. But what we did is, even when we compared for the financial year 2008 and 2009, the figures that we compared to for the financial year 2007-2008, we also redefined for that financial year. So we're comparing apples to apples. Yes, yes, yes.
No, I think you are in line with the child. A child is somebody up to 317 years, 364 days. When you turn 18, then you're no longer a child. That's that. You are including somebody who is an adult in your definition. I mean, you've not responded to this 21,000.
Yes, too. With due respect.
Yes, listen, can we, whilst he's assisting him on page 123 there, respond to the issue of the SAP 13 store? Thank you, Commissioner Lamont.
Thank you, Chair. There's actually four questions, two from the Honourable Ndlovu, and then the SB 13 from the Honourable Member there. Firstly, the issue of linkage of R5 to crime scenes. That is through a process of detectives and forensic science, the IBIS testing, and that is the only way that we will be able to give you the figures on how many of the R5s recovered are linked to crime. And I am busy with that investigation, especially with the latest round of more robberies. Then the issue of attacks or killings of police officers. Killing of police officers reflected in this report is in the line of duty. That means it's a police officer that's on duty, and it's also police officers who place themselves on duty while not physically at work. We have many police officers that when they see crime committed, they immediately put themselves on duty, and some of them through that process have been killed, and that is the figure that we reflected. The attacks based is exactly the same. It doesn't mean a police officer sitting in a shebeen and be killed by whoever. That doesn't mean that that is automatically reflected in one of our figures, because it means he's been killed because of something else. Also, the same thing when a police officer is involved in crime and that police officer has been killed, it will not be reflected in our figures as been reported in this report. That is different figures that we, people involved in crime and so on. Lastly, the issue of SAP 13s are at 5. We will never be able, not with the amount of exhibits lost in from SAP 13. We can't say SAP 13s are safe. And because of that, I requested there's a feasibility study to centralize SAP 13 stores. Take it away from the local police station, bring it to a central place, then we can have proper command of control over that SAP 13. Because there is numerous examples of exhibits getting lost at police stations. So we will never be able to say it is safe at a police station. But we do take action against police officers when we find out after investigation who are responsible for that. I mean, we had a case example in one of the provinces where there was 32 bags of Dacha confiscated. 2 weeks later, there was one bag left. And the officer has been arrested, and I believe he's suspended at this point in time, Chairperson. I don't know, Chairperson.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Just to follow up on that, when you're saying people are off duty, are they classified as being off duty as soon as they sort of clock out as such? And if so, then do you keep any kind of records of people who maybe are murdered while they are in their police uniform on their way home or something like that, when they actually aren't on duty for their firearms? Do you keep those kind of statistics?
That's correct, Madam Chair. We have all those statistics for all members killed. Even in road accidents, even on natural causes, we do have all that stats available.
Can you give us any idea as to how many people are perhaps killed, but they're not classified as on duty, but they are killed, for example, for their firearm while they're in uniform?
If you look on page 92, Chairperson, the first bullet there on the attacks of police officials. Now, there was a study done, and I can just read to you. No evidence exists to support the myth that police officers are mainly killed for their firearms, or that a relationship exists between police corruption and the murder of police officials. Now, this part was written by Dr. de Kock's Environment, who has done a study on this. So it could be that police officials were killed for firearms, but not mainly for their firearms.
Thank you very much. The shortfall.
I think the shortfall, the 21,000 cases there, should be for men older than 18. But I have to check this figure again. Just to confirm.
We hope to get that information on Tuesday. Because, yeah. We have a list of questions, many of them. In fact, we have not even started to ask our questions on these two programs. But we have pressure of time, and that's it. We will indeed be interacting with the department on these very important issues. I sit here not being very sure as to whether the sector policing program is indeed still a core program for the department. I'm not very sure. I will want to believe that this is one important program, but the presentation and even the report is really not indicating that. And it is extremely worrying. I'm not very sure as to whether, in fact, I can't even think as to how it is possible that in July the department appeared before SCOPA and said it didn't have it had a draft policy. And never indicated that they had a meeting the previous week with the provincial commissioners. But I remember that after that we indeed spoke with the department with regards to this. Never was it mentioned. And indeed today it said that they had been. I don't know. For me, it doesn't assist. You know, any policy must be evaluated. But if you have had a draft policy being implemented over such a long period, 7 years, and you just make it a policy without evaluating, it actually means you might be confirming or signing something that is not working or that has not worked for 7 years, but you're not changing, you are not evaluating it at all. I will want to believe that what you have said here before us is true, because I think the department cannot tell us that which is not true. I was at some stage tempted to say, can you instruct the office to email the minutes of that meeting which took place on the 26th? I was tempted to say that so that we can actually see if that meeting was talking to the evaluation of this draft policy, which has been in effect for 7 years. But I said maybe it's proper for me not to say that. We believe as this portfolio committee, as per what the department has said, that this is an important program. But I don't get a sense that it is being properly implemented. I don't get that sense. I don't get a sense that you can now say this is what we have achieved and these are the shortcomings of this program. And that is why at some stage really I felt Mr. Brace is supposed to be here so that he can tell us as to what he has done. A day's work for a day's pay. there are so many questions that we have with regards to human resource issues. So many. I can tell you we have many of them. People that you make station commissioners, do they qualify to be station commissioners? But do you capacitate them? Can they manage those police stations? Because that is very key and very crucial. We cannot today have people who cannot manage, managing. Because what they will do is to mismanage. And that is why you go to a police station, the station commissioner tells you that we don't have a car, not a single car that is in good working order. You go to another police station at 9 in the evening, you find a station commissioner still there. And you can actually see as you come in that there is life, there is work that is being done in this police station. So I believe as a person that a police commissioner can change a non-functioning police station into a very effective police station. And if that is true, it therefore says we must know exactly as to who do we make a police commissioner. It cannot be everybody. It has to be somebody with a particular skill, a particular track record, somebody who can manage. It cannot continue like that. But I want to thank you for your presentation. I want to thank members for the questions that they asked. We definitely are going to send a number of questions for even written reply. Because we could not ask many of our questions. It's a half day, and as you can see, we just can't go on. Let me thank the department for appearing before the portfolio committee and for providing answers to some of the questions, whether we are that happy or not happy, but at least you did provide some questions. I mean, some answers. When you open, go and buy any paper today, there's something about crime, serious crime. Sometimes you don't want even to read these papers because they're just depressing and distressing all of us. But there's one thing that can help us, help all of us. It's when we say within ourselves, in our consciences, we did everything possible, but there was still crime. And that is what will keep us going when our conscience says, I've done everything possible. In closing, let me again express our sense of, I don't want to say disgust, but Commissioner Stander, the legal unit cannot choose not to appear before the portfolio committee. It cannot. So whatever discussions you had with the head of that unit, I don't even know as to why would you discuss and question that, because she should be here. She should be here. She should account before the portfolio committee. So it's not a question of whether or not. It's a question of appearing. These people that are here are not fools. And it doesn't mean that when they appear before the portfolio committee, they are coming to get tea and lunch and sweets and so on. They come here to account, and she equally is expected to account. And that actually means that we now have to do the work that we're supposed to do today on Tuesday. And it cannot be like that. It cannot be like that. And indeed, we'll express these feelings to her when she comes on Tuesday. But we expect her here on Tuesday as a head and accountable person for that unit. It cannot be whether or not she has to go to appear before the portfolio committee. But let me thank you for coming, and thank you for the information. Thank you for responding to questions. I will not give you Commissioner Stander unless you want to say thank you before we close.
Thank you. I just want to rectify the issue with regard to legal services. It was my decision not to bring, because we had that discussion in our offices, so it's not a matter of
she did not want to come to this meeting. She actually came yesterday and she said, is there a need for me to come? Are you in a position to answer those questions? And we have actually prepared ourselves on that civil claims issue. So I'm going to take the blame for her not being here. So it is, it's not her that did not want to appear before the committee. But from our side also, thank you for the interaction. I think this committee is always supporting us to giving us some guidance and also insight from their side to improve on our service delivery, and we want to thank you for that, Chief.
Thank you, Commissioner Standa, and thank you for the presentation. Thank you for the unqualified audit opinion. Really, I think I have to say that once more. Thank you, and please keep up that good work. Please let's not have a qualified audit opinion because that will take us back. let's ensure that we maintain this one, that we can attend to others. But this one, we've achieved it. We must keep it, and it must never. We must never lose it. This meeting stands adjourned. Thank you.
Maybe tomorrow. Okay.